You don't need me to tell you there's a presidential election campaign going on. There has been for what feels like years now, but people are now actually voting in primaries, and the field of Democrats is being whittled down to just a couple. It's all keeping our next guest busy. Mara Liasson is national political correspondent for NPR and a regular contributor to Fox News as well. Somehow, she's finding time in her schedule to visit Reading next week. Mara Liasson is scheduled for next Monday at 6:30 at the Shasta College Theater. We get a chance to visit with her by phone right now. Welcome, Mara Liasson.
Thank you for having me.
It's very much a pleasure. I noticed it's been 35 years since you first joined NPR. Is it all a bit of a blur now?
Yes, I was 10 years old.
Everybody says that, don't they?
Yeah.
Is it all a bit of a blur now? I mean, that time seems to have gone by mighty fast for both of us.
Well, yes, except for the more recent years are more of a blur because they've been so crazy. But I've had a wonderful time at NPR.
Well, speak about the last couple of years. I noticed your bachelor's degree from Brown was in American history, and I have to believe that knowledge of the country's past has helped largely in your reporting, but how about in the past 5 years?
Well, I think so. I mean, I'm a big believer in history being a great preparation for journalism. I mean, it's helpful to know about something. If you're going to be a science journalist, you should, you know, study science in college. If you're going to be a political journalist, you should study history and politics.
All right, so the past 5 years it held. How about for the past five working days?
Well, I always say historical rules only work till they stop working. And lately, a lot of rules have stopped working. I always say this goes under the category everything we knew was wrong.
Uh-huh.
So that's what the last 5 days have been, or the last 2 weeks have been.
Well, yeah, when I look at the last five working days, we had Bloomberg flamed out in one day of voting. I mean, you really can't make this stuff up, can you?
No, you cannot make this stuff up at all. And the resurrection of Joe Biden from the political dead is just, you know, I couldn't have predicted that.
No,
Donald Trump, I just want to make one point about the historical rules in Donald Trump,
mm-hmm.
because the historical rule is that it's extremely hard to win a third term for your party. George H.W. Bush was the only person who did it mm-hmm. in modern history. So in that sense, he didn't break a historical rule. Hillary should have lost that election according to history. So, mm-hmm. you know, on that one, he was less of a shocker than we might have predicted, except for nobody like him has ever been elected. But on the other hand, usually after 8 years, party control of the White House does switch.
That is a good point to bring up. I mean, we certainly get to where we are a day at a time, but the progression of events that we've observed in the past few years, the Trump election, the 2018 blue wave, the impeachment in an election year, do you get much opportunity to just reflect and think, what just happened?
Yes, I really try to reflect as much as possible, and it's not easy to find the time to do that, but I do try to do that because that's my job. I mean, my job is the political correspondent. I'm an analyst. I'm supposed to make sense of what's going on. So, yes, I do try to reflect. I try to reflect about big trends.
Do you have a particular procedure, Mara? I mean, is there like a place you go, a beverage you get, a window you look out or something to go through this procedure?
No, there's not really. Just reading a lot and thinking a lot and thinking about everything I know about the past. I mean, look, the same forces that... but, you know, look, the same forces that gave rise to Donald Trump gave rise to Bernie Sanders. I'm not saying Bernie Sanders is the moral equivalent of Donald Trump, but there's so much about his populism that's similar, that's kind of like a left-wing mirror image of Donald Trump's populism. So, you know, there's a lot of things that are happening in the country that are still going to be there, even if Donald Trump wasn't around. You know, we're having a crisis of affordability for especially young people and millennials. Inflation might be low, but the price of college, housing, retirement, and health care is going through the roof, and they can't afford the basics of life. And of course, they would turn to someone who says, hey, I'm going to give that all to you for free, or to Donald Trump, who says, I have the answer. Let's have a trade war. Immigrants are the problem. You know, we'll build a wall and not let any of them in. So a lot of those forces are there. they gave rise to Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders and our current modern populism, they're not going to go away.
Which raises the question, and I hesitate to ask about predictions here, but if Bernie were to become the nominee of the Democratic Party, you'd really have essentially, the mirror image you just talked about, but this possibility then of swinging from one very urgent person to another.
Well, that is what I was thinking a lot about until Super Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems less likely now. I think the most incredible story about the last 2 weeks is that the Democratic Party decided that it didn't want a socialist as the nominee. Now, look, I'm not saying he can't still pull it out of the hat. It's going to be very, very hard. Joe Biden looks like he's about to become the prohibitive front runner. But the Democratic Party decided, not that Joe Biden suddenly turned into a great candidate. As a colleague of mine said, Super Tuesday did not make Super Biden. He still has all the problems that he had before. But the Democratic Party decided that Bernie Sanders was a bad idea. And these are high information voters. People who turn out in primaries are high information voters. And that's what happened. The center held, at least in the Democratic Party. Bernie Sanders did not do a hostile takeover of the Democratic Party the way Donald Trump did of the Republican Party. Sanders isn't even a Democrat. Donald Trump at least registered as a Republican. But so that to me is the most amazing story. In my experience covering politics, usually it's the candidate that heaves a crappy campaign over the finish line, meaning by dint of his perseverance, his superior political skills, you know, the way Bill Clinton did in 92. I mean, that happens, but this time that's not what happened. What happened is the Democratic voters, primary voters, decided that even though they had originally felt that Joe Biden was not that great, remember, he polled really high for a long time until actual voters got an up-close and personal look at him, and then they said, he doesn't look so great. But when they were faced with the choice between Sanders and Biden, they said, nope, Sanders doesn't seem like a good idea. We're going to take the guy who seems a little old and is missing a step, but he's pretty much where we are ideologically, and he's the best bet for us.
Mara Liasson is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, NPR national political correspondent in the thick of the presidential campaign. We'll take time next Monday to speak to a crowd at Shasta College Theater in Reading at 6 p.m. You can join us now on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Just in general terms, Mara, I mean, the situation has changed a lot over the course of your political time, your time covering politics. Parties don't have as much power as they did. Media don't have as much power as they once did. Do you see any institutions as still relatively solid compared to what they used to have?
Well, that's a really good question. I think that institutions are important in a democracy. There is a role for institutions that are accountable to their members, but that have some kind of historical memory and expertise. And what happened in 2016 in the Republican Party was an extraordinary collapse of the Republican Party as an institution. You know, I always say the Republicans had a failure of imagination about Donald Trump. They thought if they lay down and took two aspirin, when they got up, he'd be gone. And that's not what happened. They just couldn't believe that he was going to be the nominee. Democrats didn't have that this year because they were forewarned. They understood what was happening, and they knew that Bernie Sanders could become the nominee. But, you know, in a world where the party was strong, the party would know what it stood for and would stick to those beliefs. But look how quickly the Republican Party abandoned fiscal responsibility. Deficits are now higher than they've ever been. The idea of free trade, immigration is good for the country. America should be the leader of the free world. We stand for something in the world other than just our own national security or economic interests. We stand for a set of democratic values. All those things have been thrown over quite quickly and cavalierly by the Republicans. And the Democratic Party has kind of reasserted itself. But what's so interesting about this primary, it reasserted itself from the grassroots up. This wasn't the DNC putting its thumb on the scale for Bernie Sanders, as it was accused of doing last time when the choice was Hillary or Sanders. This was Democratic voters. Don't forget, they voted for Joe Biden not because someone knocked on their door and told them to, because Joe Biden didn't have a field organization in any of the Super Tuesday states. They certainly didn't vote for him because they saw a television commercial about him, because he had no money to run any ads. They were high information voters who decided on their own who was the better candidate.
How much did those voters get an assist, though, from the other presidential candidates as they left and endorsed Biden? You had Steyer on Saturday.
Oh, that definitely mattered. But that's what we talk about. What is momentum? What Super Tuesday was a test of was the three M's: momentum, money, and movement or organization. So money turned out didn't really matter. Bloomberg had a ton of it. Didn't help him. Joe Biden had none of it, and he won anyway. Movement or organization, Joe Biden had none of that. Bernie Sanders had a great organization, didn't really help him. And then the idea of momentum, which is kind of ephemeral. What's momentum? Momentum is a lot of free media, earned media coverage. That's what he got when the candidates like Buttigieg and Klobuchar dropped out and endorsed him. So that actually meant a lot. So the endorsements mattered. The media coverage of his extraordinary comeback in South Carolina. The best metaphor I've read was David Vondrela, a columnist in the Washington Post, said Jim Clyburn put Joe Biden on a stretcher, put the stretcher in the bus across a couple seats, and floored it. You know, and that, I mean, that's what happened. So that it's, I can't think of another 2 weeks in my career that has been more extraordinary than the last 2 weeks of the Democratic primary.
I was about to ask if this is your eighth presidential election, and this certainly seems like
the
wildest.
Yes, but who's counting, right?
Yeah, right. So every year, Mara Liasson, media observers complain about the horse race coverage, you know, the who's ahead, who's behind in polls. Is it possible to not cover it that way?
Well, here's the problem. What did they say? Twitter is to talking as polls are to voting.
Uh-huh.
You know, we like voters better than polls, okay? I think that when you obsess about the horse race and cover the polls, that is a big waste of time. But once voters actually start voting, that's a real story. That's not just some silly horse race thing. That's voters going to the polls and making a choice. And the reason why we've covered the last 2 weeks so obsessively is because the voters did something surprising and extraordinary. I think too much coverage does go to the horse race in general. But the last 2 weeks of the horse race has been a huge news story, is what I'm trying to say.
Sure. But you know, we do have actual votes now rather than polls, though, is the point.
Yeah, now we have votes. This is why we like voters better than polls.
Right. Well, you know, some of the analysts and commentators appear to make some predictions based on the polls, as if political patterns were the weather.
Well, we've certainly learned better, haven't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope we have been cured of that habit.
So how often do you or does anybody else at NPR, I mean, I hear a fair amount on Morning Edition on the way to work every day, a lot of coverage of actually talking to voters to try to figure out where they came from. And it seems like was after the fact with Trump, trying to figure out, why did you vote for Trump?
Yes. Well, we covered voters all along. And I'll never forget the first Trump rally I covered was in New Hampshire in the fall of 2015. And what I remember hearing from voters, this was the most common comment I got from anyone at a Trump rally. He's saying what I'm thinking. No one ever says what I'm thinking. And he tapped into something that Republican primary voters were feeling about immigrants, about elites, about the system, about Washington, et cetera. And I think it's really important to cover what voters are thinking. I think it's and saying. I think it's really important to cover policy, because even though we think that policy doesn't matter as much as it used to, you still want to know what is the guy planning to do if he gets elected. And the great thing about National Public Radio, because we have many hours a day to do these stories, we do them. We do them. We don't just sit around and I don't want to cast aspersions on any cable channels, but we just don't sit around and bloviate. We go out and cover and report.
Well, a couple of cable channels are probably wincing at that point. But interesting what you just said, though. Policy doesn't matter as much as it used to?
I don't think so. We're going to Georgetown, right? Okay. I don't think it matters as much as we used to, because especially in this election, this is not a referendum on healthcare, for instance. The midterms were. This election is going to be a referendum on two people, Donald Trump and whoever is his opponent. It's going to be a binary choice. And Donald Trump doesn't run as much on policy. He's a culture warrior. and he runs on very emotional issues, you know, abortion, conservative social issues, immigration, you know, elites. That's become a kind of populist issue for him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it matters a little bit less. It doesn't matter less in the long run, but I think in terms of the day-to-day back and forth of the campaign, it matters a little less.
Mara Liasson is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, coming to Reading next Monday, March 16th, scheduled at 6 o'clock at the Shasta College Theater. Join us now on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. Patrick and Talent, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, good morning. I would like to say that I'm not dogmatic, but you mentioned institution and accountability. The Democratic Party, I'm registered independent, but and I voted out of fear last time for Hillary. I'm not going to do that again with Biden. I'm not going anywhere but Bernie, and so the Democrats are going to do what they do all the time. They're not going to beat Trump because they're not going to listen to what really needs to happen, which is accountability.
All right. Thanks for that, Patrick. Appreciate it.
Well, I think that's actually a really important point, and one of the stories that I want to do, if I have some time to do it, is what Joe Biden needs to learn from Bernie, because I think the idea of Bernie voters like yourself, like your caller, who don't want to vote for anyone but Bernie, that's one issue. A much higher percentage of Bernie Sanders voters say they won't vote for the Democratic nominee if it's not Bernie Sanders than the percentage of Biden voters who say they won't vote for the nominee if it isn't their guy, Joe Biden. That's one issue. But the second issue is, what can Joe Biden learn from Bernie Sanders? Bernie Sanders is, even though he hasn't really changed his positions or approach for the last 40 years, he is talking about problems in a way that connects with the struggles of is particularly millennials and young people. What I said at the outset about how to pay for education, retirement, healthcare, and housing, those things are beyond the reach of almost a whole generation. And Joe Biden needs to really go to school on Bernie Sanders and listen to him. He doesn't have to adopt every single policy, but he does have to listen to Sanders, who understands that there's something profoundly wrong right now with the way American capitalism is working. Capitalism, the secret sauce of capitalism, especially American capitalism, is that it is supposed to provide broadly shared prosperity and economic mobility. When it stops doing those two things, people lose faith in the whole system. So the trick for Biden is to listen to Sanders and figure out what are the best policies to make American capitalism provide broadly shared prosperity and economic mobility, which it used to do a lot better than it does now.
There are still some cautionary notes in here, I think, though, about not misreading things like crowd size and intensity of feelings and yard signs and things like that as numbers of people who will support a candidate.
Well, yeah, that's why we like voters better than polls. We like voters better than yard signs. We like voters better than crowd size. When people go to the polls, that's what counts. And, you know, Bernie Sanders looked like he was going to be a prohibitive front runner, and all of a sudden the Democratic primary electorate turned on a dime and decided, nope, he's not the guy we want to follow into battle against Donald Trump. Now, that being said, it doesn't mean that they have rejected what Sanders is talking about. A big chunk of the Democratic primary electorate, they weren't big enough to win in these states, but people who are under 30, under 35, they are saying, hey, you know what? I can't pay for education, housing, healthcare, or retirement, and Bernie Sanders has some answers. And that's why I'm saying that Joe Biden needs to go to school on Sanders.
Mara Liasson, I know you have to keep opinions out of reporting, obviously, but you know, you can't help noticing things like the surge for Kamala Harris that evaporated, the surge for Elizabeth Warren that evaporated. I mean, even Michelle Bachmann had a surge with the Republicans in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Over a long reporting career, did you think women would have been further along by now?
Well, you know, early on in my career, I used to think the way we're going to get a woman president is if she is the vice president first. That's what I used to think. Then Hillary ran, and she won the popular vote. You know, she didn't win it in the right places. And, of course, we don't elect our presidents by popular vote. We elect them by a winner-take-all state-by-state system. So I think there will be a female president in my lifetime. I'm not sure exactly the route that they'll take. And, yes, gender was a factor in the demise of Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren, but each of those female candidates also made strategic mistakes, like any candidate that fades makes. So it's hard to say how much of it was gender and how much of it was that Elizabeth Warren had the wrong theory of the case when it came to health care, for instance, or her position in the race between Buttigieg and Sanders. So, you know, Kamala Harris also made a lot of tactical mistakes and didn't have a kind of ready for prime time campaign. You know, I'm not saying gender wasn't a part of it. I'm saying gender was. I just haven't been able to assign the percentage of the problem, how much was gender and how much was just basic strategic political mistakes like any candidate makes.
We're down to our last minute, and I just want to ask how concerned you might be about the future of straight news reporting like what NPR does. I know some people are going to disagree with that, but the fact is that NPR at least goes
to... I'm concerned about the future of local news because that's the front lines of journalism, and, you know, local papers have been folding left and right. It's really bad. Somebody has to figure out a business model for local journalism. I'm not worried about NPR. I think we're doing fine. I think that all of the web traffic on mainstream news organization sites have gone way up in the past couple of years. People clearly would like to, you know, want to consume the product we're creating. So I don't think, I think we're under tremendous stress. You know, this is a period where all democratic institutions are under tremendous stress. You know, when we have a president who says we're the enemy of the people and human scum and, you know, should be prosecuted and are fake news. Yeah, you know, that's stress. But I am not worried about the future of mainstream journalism. I think it's alive and well.
All right. Mara Liasson, certainly part of that, national political correspondent for NPR, first joined in 1985. She'll be in Reading Monday, March 16th at 6 at the Shasta College Theater, brought in by the McConnell Foundation, the Women's Fund of the Shasta Regional Community Foundation. Mara Liasson, a pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. Take care.